KFIZ News Time is 11 minutes past 10 o'clock here on a Thursday, the 18th day of February of 2021. Spencer Wagon here with you for hour number three of Fond du Lac Today, coming to you from the AirTech Heating Studios. Thanks for joining us here this morning. Going to talk government topics for the next hour this morning. We are scheduled to be joined by Congressman Glenn Grothman coming up in our 10:30 segment this morning. But first, we're going to stay local and talk about issues facing the state government with State Representative Jeremy Thiesfeld. Good morning, sir. How are you
today?
Good
morning. I'm doing well.
Thanks for joining us. Nice to see the sun and temperatures above zero,
That's
eh?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to not hear the snow squeak under my feet when I walk on it.
That's true. I'm hoping for some of the packed down stuff to finally lift up. I know the driveway of my place is still packed down from this past weekend snow, and it just being frozen. And
we all have that dream of getting the snow cleared off before the car drives on it.
Yeah.
Very seldom does that happen at my house.
That's very true. Yeah. Not where I live either. So not talking about weather. We're talking about state budget. A lot of news coming out. Of course, the governor giving his budget address earlier this week, and you put out a statement yesterday. So I wanted to get your thoughts on some of the proposals with Governor Evers' latest biennial budget, two-year spending plan. We could talk about any number of topics. There's so much included in it, obviously. But just want to get overall your initial thoughts listening to the governor's address and his budget proposal, your takeaways from what he proposed the other night.
Well, one of the differences I've noticed in this is the second budget Tony Evers has put out, just in overall first impressions in comparison to the process when Scott Walker was governor, I was in the office for four of his budgets, is that when you are not the party of the president, you get very little information on what's in the budget before it comes out. Neither time have we been provided with the speech ahead of time. And when Scott Walker was governor, he gave everybody the speech shortly before the speech came out. But we haven't been given that opportunity with Governor Evers. And in fact, yesterday, the budget address was Tuesday night. Yesterday was Wednesday. I was in Madison yesterday and late afternoon, and I still had not received any official paperwork on what was in the budget. I mean, I have this book here now called The Budget in Brief, curiously, it's budget and brief, but it's 150 pages long.
A brief 150.
Yes.
Not the Cliffs Notes.
But I had to call and get this document. And so finally it came to me. I don't know why I saw others with them, so I have no idea why I didn't get one. Mm-hmm. So I haven't had a lot of time to dig into it in paper. It's been on computer, but I'm kind of old school, and I like to look at things on paper so I can write on it. And have been kind of gleaning through it here and there since yesterday afternoon, combining it with what had been released to the media beforehand. So we knew very little of what was going to be in the budget, just what was in the media and then what we heard in the speech. And the speech, frankly, was pretty sketchy in terms of not a lot of information put out. It was about 35 minutes long. A lot of it was video clips of people speaking. And so we left that speech really not having much idea of what the major details were in the budget. And almost immediately, media reports were coming out on what was in the budget. So clearly it had been provided to the media before it had been provided to the legislature, which is fine. I mean, I prefer to know more beforehand, but I understand why they do that. And then we just started seeing some of the details. Now, before I go into the part that don't like, I want to say that there is a lot in there I don't like, but there are also some things in there I like. So I'd like to point out a few things that I agree with in the governor's proposal. He has a large investment in broadband, somewhere in the area of $200 million, and seems to be placing more focus on rural Wisconsin than he did in his previous budget. Now, the governor, the major base of his support in elections comes from Madison and Milwaukee, so I guess it's not surprising that most of his policy seems to lean towards those two areas. But the pandemic, I think, has opened the wound wide in understanding the deficit that we have in our rural areas and some of the government services. And one of those in particular is how far behind they are in broadband. You know, their schools haven't been able to be in session because of the pandemic, and then their school kids couldn't be online, like a lot of the urban kids could. So I think that's a good thing. the UW tuition freeze once again. A lot of these students lost their jobs because of the pandemic. We still want them to be going to school and getting their degrees, so I think it's important to try to keep those costs down for them, that they don't pile up any more student debt. There was a provision in there for some assistance for first-time home buyers. I think buying your own home is still the American dream. I hope it always is, and it's good that we're looking to help them out with some tax deductions for accounts when they are purchasing their first home. Transportation, I-94 East-West Project in Milwaukee County, that's been slated to begin for a number of cycles here now, and the governor is beginning the investment and starting that project as well. And that's very important for the state's economy because Milwaukee drives the state's economy. Mental health. I think a lot of the mental health struggles that we are having in Wisconsin existed prior to the pandemic, but we've had this huge self-inflicted wound kind of across the age spectrum, from children in schools to elderly people in nursing homes that haven't been able to visit with their loved ones. And it's been a difficult time. And looking back, I don't think it was necessary to do all of the things that we did. But that being said, that's past us now, and we need to deal with the results of that. And so I think there's something like $150 million, I think, was the number of investment in mental health. I don't know that that's the magic number. The difficult part with mental health is you have to have mental health practitioners, and that's a very big deficit that we have across the country, and Wisconsin is not immune to that. So we need to find a way to get more people into that particular field. So those are some of the good things that I'm sure there are some more as I pick through it that I will find. But 2 years ago when the governor put out his budget, the legislature, which of course is controlled by Republicans, I'm a Republican, it was to the extent that they literally just kind of threw the thing out and started over from scratch. And based on what's in this budget, I strongly believe that's probably what's going to happen again. And the reasons for it, and my press release stated that it was an unserious budget, and frankly, I saw that in lots of press releases. We didn't collaborate on that word, but I think that was kind of just the thought that was going through a lot of our minds, because there are things in here that are never going to be in the Republicans' proposal back to the governor. Because, you know, the way this works now, the governor introduces it to the legislature. The legislature either gets rid of it and writes their own, or makes adjustments to it and sends it back to the governor. And the hope is to have it signed into law by July 1st. Well, when we send something back to the governor, he can only cross things out. He can't add stuff to it. Now, there are some tricks that governors have done that can add some additional cost into the budget, but most of that stuff has been outlawed statutorily in years past. And so what we send back to the governor is what he's going to have available to him. And he either signs it, he does partial vetoes, or he vetoes the whole thing, and then we kind of start over again. I don't know what's going to develop. I'm not on the Joint Finance Committee that does that work. Obviously, I have some input from outside the committee. But there are going to be significant changes to this budget, because there are just things in there that absolutely Republicans are never going to agree to.
Is there any chance of finding common ground, or is it just going to be what you described, how the Republicans are going to rework it and send it back?
Well, I think so. I mean, ultimately, we have to get a budget put together.
Right.
I mean, Wisconsin, different than other states, if we don't have a budget by July 1st, which occasionally happens, we just continue on with the provisions of the last budget, which is what happened 2 years ago. Did that happen, or was it 4 years ago? I can't recall. Yeah. But anyways, it does happen. And so we're protected in that regard. It's not like we got to shut the state down like the federal government always has going on, or other states have going on. So that's a good thing. But ultimately, there are new things always every 2 years that need to be addressed. We need to get an agreement in place, and that comes down to compromises. But the thing here is when legislating goes on, some people put when they put bills together, and that's what the budget is. It's a big bill, mm-hmm. is what it is. They put extra stuff in there, kind of things that they know are never going to get passed, mm-hmm. but they use it for negotiation. It's kind of like, well, okay, I'll take out the $15 minimum wage, but you're going to take out something that you want.
Right.
Well, it's not going to work that way. Mm-hmm. There is so much. I mean, this is a liberal wish list. It is heavy in policy when the budget is supposed to be a fiscal document. A lot of those policy items are just simply going to be taken out. And that some of that really just isn't negotiable. So we're open, and I'm optimistic that we're going to put together a good budget. In spite of the pandemic, Wisconsin's fiscal numbers have turned out surprisingly good. The unemployment numbers have been low. I think that's a testament to the strong budgeting we've done in the last 10 years. And the stick-to-itiveness of the citizens of the state of Wisconsin to buckle down and get to work and establish good budgets within their own family. All of those are good lessons learned, and I think we're seeing the benefits of that now, and that we aren't seeing the depths of economic disarray that some other states are seeing.
Talking with State Representative Jeremy Thiesfeldt for a few more minutes. Talked budget. Do want to get some comments from you since we last spoke. We spoke, I think it was late January, and I was right ahead of kind of that back and forth with the mask mandate. It was overturned, but then almost instantly after it was overturned, the governor put out a new mask mandate. And I know you put out a press release, a statement saying that the Supreme Court should step in and make a decision on this. Explain kind of your comments there and where do we stand with this as of now? Because the mask mandate's still in place, but there's still some discussion over it, obviously.
Yeah, well, just for the listeners here, I'll go back to when the governor first put out his – because it's really not about the mask mandate. It's about the governor's emergency health orders. Mm-hmm. And then he used the emergency health order to put the mask mandate in place. You go back to last March when the governor put his first emergency health order in. He put it in, I believe, for 60 days. That's the max. And then when 60 days was approaching an end, he started saying that he was going to extend it, mm-hmm. extend it beyond 60 days. Same order, just extend it. And the legislature said, no, that's not legal. You can't do that without legislative approval. And so it was taken to court, and the Supreme Court made a fairly rapid decision saying that, no, you couldn't do that. And so then the governor, we went for a while where we didn't have any emergency health orders, and actually the numbers in the pandemic improved over that period of time last summer. And then, I forget if it was July or August, then the mask mandate came down, and it was done under the guise of being a new emergency health order. It was different than the last one. And that was the way the governor justified it, is that it's not the same thing. I'm not trying to extend it. I'm putting a new one out. Mm-hmm. Well, since that time, there have been three additional ones, and I think that at least the last two have been identical. So you can't use that as an excuse that it's a different one anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we in the legislature and there was a private entity out there that challenged this as well. And the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on it in November, and we've been waiting for a decision ever since. So in other words, what it's coming down to is, does the governor have the ability to just simply declare new emergency orders mm-hmm. over and over again, even though the legislature has the power to end them? Because it kind of becomes this game of whack-a-mole where the governor puts on an emergency order, the legislature whacks it down, mm-hmm. and then another head pops up somewhere else.
Got your mallet
up
ready.
Another one, and you hit that one down, and we get this kind of childish game back and forth, mm-hmm. and that cannot be the intent of what the legislation or the statutes are supposed to mean. And so this is the legitimate function of the state Supreme Court, is to make decisions like this. And I implore them that they need to get this done, because it's not constitutional. A lot of people are saying it's a constitutional crisis. This is not a provision that's in the state constitution. It's in state law. Those are different things. Mm-hmm. Statutes flow from the constitution. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of a legal crisis, you might say. Can the governor just continually keep a state in an emergency situation mm-hmm. in spite of the objections of the legislature?
So it's not so much asking people to wear masks. It's the 60-day extension, mm-hmm. the continual extension. Right?
Yeah, I mean, if people want to wear masks, I have no problem with that. I wear one in most places. If there's a business that wants me to wear it, I'm certainly going to comply with that. I wear one when I'm going around the Capitol because I don't care to make other people feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I admit I don't have it on constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is about good governance. We have three co-equal branches of government, and we cannot just for this unlimited period of time have the executive branch able to have complete authority essentially over what goes on in the state.
So if the governor were to come to the legislature and ask, I'd like to put another one in place or keep this one ongoing, would that be different in your mind then?
Well, it would be different, and obviously it would depend what was in the ask. But we've expressed repeatedly in the legislature that we're certainly willing to, I mean, it's not going to be me sitting down with the governor.
Right,
it'll be
right.
The leadership that would sit down. But I'm not opposed to that, and I think that we're open to that. But at this point, they haven't done that, at least not very often.
Very good. State Representative Jeremy Thiesfeldt, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. News Talk 1450 KFIZ. It's 10:20.